A person who examines any corner of the universe, from the giant galaxies in space to the living beings in nature, and from his own body to invisible cells, sees a flawless plan incorporating both order and design. Every spot of the universe overflows with a precise and explicit fact, the fact of creation. The miracle in the ear. Right now, as you are listening to this program, a miracle is taking place, which you have probably never noticed so far. Some vibrations emitted by your radio are producing some waves in the air, filling the room you are in or the car you are driving. These vibrations in the air are entering your ear at a speed of 350 kilometers, that is 220 miles per second. These vibrations, which had been mere physical motions until now, are being transformed into sound by incredibly complex operations taking place in your ear. Surprisingly, all these operations occur in less than 1/1000th of a second. Thanks to this system, you hear millions of different sounds, like the conversation and the music you are listening to right now. You can hear thousands of different human voices or music and distinguish sounds from one another. Moreover, you listen to them without the interference of any hissing, humming, or rustling sounds, with a perfect quality, much better than the world's highest quality hi-fi system. So how is all this accomplished? What kind of structure do the sense of hearing and the ear have? Over and above this, to whom are we indebted for this great miracle of hearing? A scientific analysis of these questions leads us to conclude the following. The ear, the organ associated with hearing, is a marvel of biological design. It is a matchless device built through the astounding collaboration of many sciences, including acoustics, mechanics, hydraulics, and electronics. It is certainly impossible that such a marvel of design could have been formed by coincidence, as the theory of evolution claims. Therefore, the ear is a crystal clear sign of creation, God's superior and flawless creation. Before examining the structure of the ear, some consideration of the concept of sound will be helpful. Most of us assume that there exists some sounds in the external world and that we perceive them through our ears. Out in the street, we assume that there are the noises of cars and human beings and that we hear them. The truth, however, is different. No such sounds exist outside. Absolute silence pervades the world. There are only vibrations outside. These vibrations are converted into sounds by the ear and the brain. So long as there is no ear to hear, there is also no sound. For this reason, if living beings had no sense of hearing, the concept of sound would not exist. It would never occur to anyone that vibrations in the air corresponded to sounds. Everyone would live and die in deep silence. Yet, thanks to the sense of hearing given to us, we live in a world where we can hear thousands of sounds, take pleasure from them, and communicate with one another. As stated earlier, the process of hearing starts with the vibrations in the air. These vibrations are intensified by the auricle and then directed into the ear canal leading down to the eardrum. In order for hearing to take place, the vibrations must be magnified in force, going through numerous stages in the eardrum and then converted into electrical signals. The first component of this system is the auricle, the function of which is unknown to most people. From the viewpoint of the primitive level of science in the 19th century, Charles Darwin defined the auricle as a non-functional organ which had become vestigial in the evolutionary process. However, more recent research revealed that the auricle has a very important function, namely, collecting and directing vibrations. The irregularly shaped internal plate of cartilage in the auricle also serves a purpose. Research revealed that the irregular shapes are organized in the most appropriate way to produce the best acoustic effect. A part of the auricle, called the concha, serves as a kind of megaphone and concentrates the sound waves in the outer ear canal. This way, the intensity of the sound waves is amplified by approximately 17 decibels. Thus, the intensified sound enters the outer ear canal. The outer ear canal is the section between the auricle and the eardrum. The ear canal, which is about 3.5 centimeters long, also performs very important functions. Thanks to the special structure of the outer ear canal, the sound waves passing through it are intensified. A comparison between the diffusion of sound waves in the atmosphere and the outer ear indicated that the sound is magnified in force in adult humans. This amplification is especially true for frequencies of from 1,000 to 8,000 waves a second. Surprisingly, this is the frequency range corresponding to the human voice. In other words, our ear is equipped with a special structure that makes human voices louder than other sounds. In another interesting trait of the outer ear canal is the regularly secreted, thick, waxy product called earwax. This secretion contains a kind of a poison that keeps bacteria and insects away from the ear. However, one should also consider the risks in having such a secretion here. This secretion may at any time fill the ear and render it useless. Yet, a very special precaution is taken against this possibility. The cells on the surface of the outer ear are lined up in an outward spiral. Thus, the earwax always leaks towards the outside. Channeled down the ear canal, vibrations end in the eardrum. This membrane is stretched across the entrance to the middle ear. The middle ear consists of three small bones. The eardrum and these three small bones convert the sound in the form of air vibrations into mechanical vibrations. The middle ear, which is followed by the inner ear, a fluid-filled section, has a mechanical system amplifying the sound which enters a liquid environment from the air. The eardrum, which is the initial section of the middle ear, is so sensitive that it even perceives vibrations of molecular size. This sensitivity of the eardrum enables you to hear someone whispering yards away in almost complete silence. Likewise, you can hear the vibration produced when you gently rub your two fingers together. There is another amazing feature of this membrane. After it receives a vibration, it instantly turns back to its initial position. Calculations have indicated that the eardrum is restored to its previous motionless state in 4/1000th of a second, even after receiving vibrations the membrane is most sensitive to. If the membrane did not accomplish this operation so fast, then every sound we hear would echo in our ears. Yet, at this point, a serious problem arises. The eardrum, so sensitive even to the slightest vibrations, is also subjected to the strong vibrations caused by the blood pressure of the veins nourishing it. The sound vibrations produced by blood cells moving in the capillaries that nourish the eardrum can be likened to the sound vibrations caused by rocks rolling in a tunnel. Surprisingly, however, we never hear this sound. How does this happen? An amazing system established in the human body accomplishes this. The static sound of the blood vessels perceived by the eardrum are sorted by the nervous system from the sounds coming from outside. Just like advanced computers eliminating the static and rustling sounds from a sound recording, the nervous system eliminates the vibrations blood vessels cause in the eardrum. This way, throughout our lives, we never hear the sounds caused by the pressure of our blood vessels. Similarly, the jaw and teeth produce giant vibrations on the eardrum when we chew. However, the nervous system also sorts out this sound from others and eliminates it. The eardrum intensifies the vibrations it receives and channels them down to three little bones which make contact with one another in a very delicate balance. These three bones, known as the hammer, anvil and stirrup, further amplify these vibrations. The middle ear also produces a buffer effect by lowering extremely loud sounds. This is performed by the two smallest muscles in the body, which control the hammer, anvil, and stirrup. These muscles ensure that extremely loud sounds are reduced before being transmitted to the inner ear. It is thanks to these muscles that we hear shockingly high volumes at more moderate levels. We have no control over these muscles. They swing into action automatically. Even if a startlingly loud noise is made beside us when we are asleep, these muscles immediately contract and decrease the intensity of the vibration transmitted to the inner ear. In the absence of such a mechanism, strong sounds could easily harm the inner ear and impair our sense of hearing. Yet, thanks to marvelous planning, the ear is equipped with a mechanism enabling man to hear very low sounds as well as protecting him from extremely high ones. This mechanism never goes wrong. Not even once does it lower those sounds which should be intensified or intensify those which should be lowered. The middle ear, which has such a perfect design, needs to maintain an important balance. The pressure in the middle ear and the pressure on the other side of the eardrum, namely atmospheric pressure, should be equal. This balance was not overlooked either, and a ventilating channel secures the movement of air between the middle ear and the outside world. This channel is an empty tube extending from the middle ear to the mouth, called the Eustachian tube. There is no doubt that all these are evident signs of an incredibly delicate and well-calculated design in the human ear. In other words, the ear is the work of God, who is the possessor of infinite knowledge and power. The theory of evolution, which struggles to deny this fact, can do nothing other than produce entirely implausible scenarios. For instance, the scenario evolutionists put forward regarding the origin of the ear is incredibly absurd. Evolutionists claim that all mammals, including man, evolved from reptiles. However, the ear structures of reptiles and mammals differ greatly. All mammals have a middle ear structure consisting of the three small bones, as we explained earlier. However, in the middle ear of all reptiles, there is only one single bone. In the face of this, evolutionists claim that four different individual bones in the jaws of reptiles coincidentally changed places and migrated to the middle ear. Here, they coincidentally took just the right shape, changing into the anvil and the stirrup. The same scenario also suggests that the single bone in the middle ear of reptiles also changed shape and changed into the hammer. And last but not least, the extremely delicate balance among the three bones was simply established by chance. This imaginary claim, devoid of any scientific basis, is as nonsensical as saying that the screws of the four wheels of a car migrated by chance to the engine and changed their individual shapes and functions, eventually becoming the engine spark plugs. There is another point which shows the absurdity of the jawbones migrating to the middle ear scenario. Such an imaginary transformation would make a living being completely lose its sense of hearing. A living thing whose jawbones were gradually moving to its middle ear would definitely lose the power of hearing. Such a living thing, according to the precepts of evolutionists, would be at a disadvantage among other members of its species and would be eliminated and become extinct. A living being whose jawbones were moving to its ears would again end up with a non-functioning jaw. Such a living thing would have poor chewing ability and would eventually lose that ability completely. This would again put it at a disadvantage and lead to its extinction. In brief, the theory of evolution, which claims that living things came into existence by chance, is obviously hopeless in the face of the superior creation in the ear. Another stumbling block that makes evolutionists desperate is that living beings, considered primitive by evolutionists, possess more complex ear structures than those species that are considered advanced. Evolutionists claim that amphibians, which can survive both on land and in water, such as frogs, evolved into reptiles over time. According to this claim, amphibians are the ancestors of reptiles and are supposed to be more primitive than reptiles. An examination of the structure of amphibian ears, however, reveals that amphibians have a more complex ear structure than reptiles. Amphibians have an eardrum and middle ear cavity, while reptiles just have one single bone. This fact plainly invalidates the scenario suggesting progress from primitive towards complex structures. In brief, a mere examination of the structure of the ear and its origins invalidates the theory of evolution. The Grolier Encyclopedia, known as an evolutionist source, confesses this, saying that the evolutionary origin of the inner ear is unknown. Let us briefly review what we have so far said about the structure of the ear. What we hear as sounds are actually vibrations. Waves in the air are collected by the auricle and directed into the ear canal. After passing through the ear canal, they hit the eardrum and set it vibrating. The eardrum relays this vibration to the hammer, anvil, and stirrup to be intensified and regulated. Yet, these are all nothing but mere vibrations taking place in the outer and middle ear. Despite the continuous transmission of vibrations, we are still only talking about mechanical energy. In other words, no sound has been produced yet. The transformation of mechanical energy into sound happens in the inner ear. The inner ear is divided into two parts, the cochlea, which contains the hearing nerves, and the labyrinth, which houses the sense of balance. The cochlea is a spiral-shaped, fluid-filled organ that resembles a snail shell. The stapes, which is the last component of the middle ear, is connected to a membrane on the entrance to the inner ear. This connection maintains the transfer of the mechanical vibrations in the middle ear to the fluid filling of the inner ear. This transfer, however, causes a great loss in the vibrations and weakens them considerably. This loss is due to the resistance by the fluid to the vibrations coming through the air. It is estimated that this effect, known as acoustic resistance, cuts down sound by approximately 30 decibels. If no precaution were taken against acoustic resistance, then we would hear sounds 30 decibels lower than their actual strengths. That would mean we would not be able to hear some sounds at all. The sounds we do hear, on the other hand, would be much lower than their actual intensities. However, a comprehensive precaution is taken against acoustic resistance. All the sound amplifying factors in the outer and middle ear contribute to this precaution. The auricle, the eardrum, and the small bones in the middle ear amplify the sound waves before they meet acoustic resistance. Surprisingly, it is estimated that this amplification is also of around 30 decibels, the same amount as the loss caused by the acoustic resistance. It is evident that there is a very well-computed balance here. The vibrations reaching the fluid in the inner ear through this delicate balance create waves in this fluid. The inner walls of the cochlea are lined with small hair-like structures called stereocilia, which are affected by the waves in the surrounding fluid. These hair-like structures undergo slight changes depending on the vibrations in the fluid. A strong sound makes more of these cells bend in a stronger fashion. Every individual sound frequency in the external world generates different interactions in these hair-like structures. What do the movements of these hair-like structures represent? What is the relationship between the movement of the stereocilia in the cochlea and listening to a classical music concert, recognizing the voice of a friend, hearing the noise of a car, or differentiating among millions of other sounds? The answer is interesting and restates the incredible design in the ear. These hair-like structures are actually separate mechanisms located on about 20,000 individual hair cells surrounding the inner wall of the cochlea. Like the domino effect, the stereocilia push one another when they perceive a vibration. This movement opens the lids of the hair cells underneath the hair-like structures, through which ions enter. When stereocilia lean to the opposite side, the lids of the hair cells close. This constant movement alters the chemical balance of the cells, causing them to generate electrical impulses. These electrical impulses are transmitted via nerves to the brain, where they are interpreted and converted into sound sensations. How the brain, which is merely a piece of flesh, makes this interpretation and turns the incoming electrical impulses into a human voice, a thunderclap, or a piece of music, remains a mystery. In brief, our listening to the sound of a piano involves different movements of the hair-like structures in the cochlea according to the different notes, the formation of different ion equilibriums in the hair cells connected to the hair-like structures with each of these different movements, and the productions of impulses by these chemical processes. The cells perform these awe-inspiring operations every second for a lifetime, without ever getting exhausted, being confused, or deformed. Science still has to puzzle out even the technical details of this system. While generating the electrical signals, the cells in the inner ear also manage to reflect the frequency, strength, and rhythms of the incoming sound waves. This is such a complex process that so far science has not yet established whether frequency differentiation is carried out in the inner ear or the brain. Meanwhile, the movements of the stereocilia in the inner ear also deserve a mention. We just mentioned that the stereocilia swing in a domino effect fashion. However, the reality is that the movement of this hair-like structure is often very limited. Research has revealed that a movement of the radius of an atom in the hair-like structure is enough to initiate a reaction. Researchers clarify the sensitivity of the hair-like structure with an interesting example. If we imagine the hair-like structure to be the size of the Eiffel Tower, the reaction in the hair cell connected to it would start even when the top of the Eiffel Tower was rocked by just 3 centimeters. The answer to the question how frequently the stereocilia sway is also very interesting. The frequency changes depending on the frequency of the sound. The number of swaying movements of the stereocilia reaches unbelievable levels as the frequency increases. For instance, a sound of a frequency of 20,000 causes the stereocilia to sway 20,000 times a second. The delicate calculations in human beings' hearing range are also worthy of attention. Humans can detect frequencies of from 20 to 20,000 waves a second. Thanks to this limitation, called the hearing threshold, we cannot hear very uncomfortable sounds. Auditory sensitivity thresholds differ in animals according to their needs. Whales and bats can hear frequencies as high as 200,000 waves a second. It is not just the stereocilia and hair cells that make up the inner ear. There are numerous other cells responsible for providing energy and support for these structures. They are all specialized in structure and carry out their own particular tasks. The same delicate balance holds true also for the fluid balance in the inner ear. The fluid which surrounds the stereocilia and moves the hair cells is called the endolymph. This fluid is surrounded by another fluid called the perilymph, and these two fluids are separated by a membrane-like structure. The compositions of these fluids play a very important role in the sense of hearing. The inner ear also contains a vital mechanism responsible for balance. Before proceeding with the structure of the balance center, it will be useful to examine the concept of balance. Balance is an amazing concept, maintained by the most complex systems in the human body. Balance in man is nothing like the balance of a table or a chair, because the human body is constantly in motion. The center of gravity of the body is always being recalculated. Orders are given to the muscles in accordance with these calculations. The inner ear contains an important component of this balance system, which keeps our body under control every second and enables people to make very fine adjustments, as in the case of a rope dancer. The balance center in the inner ear is called the labyrinth. The labyrinth contains 3 small semicircular bones. The inside of these bones are hollow like tubes. The semicircles are 6.5 millimeters each in diameter, and the diameter of the area inside them, that is, their cross-section, is 0.4 millimeters. The semicircles are connected to each other at very peculiar angles. A study of these angles revealed that each semicircle correlates to X, Y, and Z coordinates, which are the basis of 3-dimensional geometry. In all the three semicircles in the labyrinth, there exists a special fluid, as in the case of the cochlea. On the surface, where this fluid is, there are also hair-like structures similar to the cochlea. When we turn our heads from side to side, walk or move, the fluid in these semicircles moves and causes these structures to vibrate. Similar to the cochlear system, this vibration occurring in the hair-like structures alters the ion balance of the hair cells associated with these structures and produces electrical signals. Nerves emanating from the labyrinth transmit the electrical signals produced in the labyrinth in the inner ear to the cerebellum, which is an organ located at the back of the brain. The nerves carrying messages from the labyrinth to the cerebellum consist of 20,000 nerve fibers. The cerebellum interprets the information coming from the labyrinth every moment. To maintain balance, however, there is also a need for different forms of information. That is why the cerebellum constantly receives information from the eyes and the muscles all over the body. The cerebellum analyzes these pieces of information at an incredible speed and computes the location of the body in relation to gravity. Then, based on these calculations, it determines what movement the muscles must make. The result is again communicated to the muscles via the nerves. All these mind-boggling operations take place in less than 1/100th of a second. Meanwhile, oblivious of this miracle, we walk, run, and take the most arduous exercise. However, if we attempted to write down the formulae of all the calculations taking place in our body in one single moment, while we were doing all these things, they would cover thousands of pages. What we have examined so far indicates that our ears, the organs responsible for hearing, have an amazing design. The ear is a flawless organ functioning through dozens of interrelated complex mechanisms working in harmony. Modern science and technology fails even to unravel the details of the working principles of this system, let alone imitate it. Surely, it is unlikely that such a complex design could have emerged by chance, as the theory of evolution claims. Every design indicates the existence of a conscious designer who created it. The outstanding design in the ear proves the existence of God, who flawlessly created this organ, together with his sovereignty over nature. In the face of this fact, what falls to man is simply to be grateful to God, the bestower on him of the sense of hearing. In the 23rd verse of Surat al-Mulk, God addresses people as follows. Say, He it is who brought you into being, and made for you the ears and the eyes and the hearts. Little is it that you give thanks. In return for all the features God has given him, man should turn to God, not merely with words, but with due contemplation and sensitivity of the heart. This is emphasized in the 31st and 32nd verses of Surah Yunus. Say, Who gives you sustenance from the heaven and the earth? Or who controls the hearing and the sight? And who brings forth the living from the dead, and brings forth the dead from the living? And who regulates the affairs? Then they will say, God. Say then, will you not then guard against evil? This then is God, your true Lord. And what is there after the truth but error? How are you then turned back? This program is based on the book by Harun Yahya, The Miracle in the Ear.